I sure appreciate the opportunity to visit with all of you and to be a part of the Range Beefcow Symposium. I'm going to talk a little bit about limit-fed, high-grain diets for wintering cows, and it might seem that maybe we're a little late on this topic. Many people were forced to look at limit-fed rations this last year when we had high hay prices, low availability, some situations that forced us to evaluate some different ways to winter our cows. But I guess I'd like to take a minute and kind of evaluate high-grain or limit-fed diets, maybe the successes we've had, some of the challenges with limit-fed diets, and kind of move on from there and kind of and maybe use it as a decision tool. We may, of course, we're always 1 year away from another drought, so it might be a good opportunity to kind of look at limit-fed diets and using those as a management tool to reduce our winter feed costs. I spent a little bit of time looking at some of the literature, trying to look at some studies looking at limit-fed diets, and I came across probably one of the first studies that was done, 1886, looking at limit-fed high-grain diets. Kind of shown not a lot of literature about it, but again, a pretty good painting about the limit-fed situation years ago, depicted by Charlie Russell. I think sometimes we have some concerns during the winter that we may wind up in a scenario like this, but I think there's been a lot of success with limit-fed diets and some opportunities to reduce our winter costs. So I think if we do use it as a management tool, one of the first decisions we have to make is, do we go ahead, do we try and limit feed, do we evaluate our options, or do we just continue to use maybe a free choice hay type of a wintering program? One of those decisions we have to make as managers. So I think certainly our limit fed situation needs to be a part of an overall management plan, and this is a slide that I stole from Gary Kuhl at Kansas State that I like to use a lot in these situations where we're in a situation, maybe drought has put us into a management situation where we have to reevaluate our resources, look at some opportunities. Maybe we're considering to cull some additional cows, maybe use some alternative feeds, and I'll touch on that in a little bit here. We also need to resort, maybe reanalyze and ration what hay we do have during a drought situation. Substituting grain for our forages is something we're going to address today, and certainly early weaning. There are years when hay prices are high, and situations where we may need to use grains in our rations. So again, part of the problem with this equation, and I'm always troubled by it a little bit, in that if we strictly compare hay versus corn, we're strictly looking at it on an energy basis, and we're not considering the difference in protein value between hay versus corn. So something that I like to use is basically trying to use a corn-soybean meal mix and the relative prices of each of those. Maybe we can use a protein supplement versus corn, the relative prices of those two ingredients to try and determine what is a competitive hay price, trying to make that decision tool whether or not it would pay to just to limit feed grain in our winter ration or to go ahead and use free choice hay. In this example here, I've got what I'm trying to evaluate is a 12% native hay, something typical in the Laramie area, basically a middle brome hay that we have that's about 12% crude protein. And what I'm trying to come out, what's a competitive price between hay versus corn? And so I've got the corn. Let me see if I can get this to work here. I see my little arrow here. Basically, we've got corn along this, what would be the left side for you over there, our bushel weight of corn. So this is trying to get at, when I get a call from a producer asking me, well, does it pay, what should I be paying for hay? What's the comparative price for hay? Well, if we look at the price of corn, which I'm going to use at $2.60, in this case, $2.60 per bushel. And I also know that certainly we've got a higher energy value for corn in this case, so it's going to take less corn, less pounds of corn, to equal on an energy standpoint that hay. But I also need some protein in there. So I've listed across the top of this axis, I've got the purchase price. In this case, I'm using soybean meal as a basis because I can pull a market price for soybean meal. I can get a USDA price on soybean meal and figure out what my protein source is going to cost me. So what I'm trying to do is combine corn and soybean meal. Again, 1 pound, I'm trying to use this as an example here. So 1 pound of a 12% crude protein native hay along the bottom of that slide. 1 pound of that 12% crude protein native hay to provide the same amount of energy and the same amount of protein, I need to feed around a little less than half a pound of corn and about a tenth of a pound of soybean meal. The combination of those two things would be similar in energy and protein to my 12% native hay. So that's what I'm using. So based on the price of corn that I'm feeding a half a pound of and the price of soybean meal that I'm feeding at a tenth of a pound here, if you add those two together, what should my comparative price for native hay be? And in this case, if we follow this down, I'm paying $2.60 a ton for soybean meal. That's Kansas City price is around $2.40. By the time I can get it to Laramie, it's going to cost me around $2.60. So $2.60 for my soybean meal, $2.60 per bushel for my corn. I come up with a price of about $75 a ton for my 12% crude protein native hay. So again, another example that we need to evaluate what our feed resources are, how much they cost, and then whether or not it pays to look at a limit-fed diet or maybe to go ahead and use a full forage, free-choice hay type of product. So again, another and a management tool that we can use every year to try and evaluate whether or not it's important to use these types of things. So I do this for several things. This is a spreadsheet that I built that I use. I get questions a lot of times. Certainly, we don't have to strictly rely on corn as our grain or our energy source in a limit-fed situation. We've got a lot of other forages out there. We've got corn gluten feed, dried corn gluten feed in this example. We've got distillers dried grains. We've got wheat mids. We've got beet pulp, several different energy sources and protein sources that we can utilize in our limit-fed rations. So the question becomes, well, what should I pay? What's a competitive price for this? And so I've done a similar thing. If we use that example that I just gave you with the 12% native hay, trying to determine whether or not it pays to limit feed, we can use the same thing to comparatively price our byproduct feeds. And again, this is kind of a crude start, but this is a starting point in a lot of cases for that telephone call that I get asking me, well, I can buy beet pulp for $10 a ton. Is that a good price or not? And so I'm kind of going to go through that. These slides are set up very similar to that. Again, across the top, I've got soybean meal priced at 44% soybean meal. Again, I can pull that price, market price for that off of the internet. I've got my corn weight here, anywhere from $1.60 to $2.80. So again, if we look at our $2.60 corn and our $2.60 soybean meal, we see that a comparative price for the same value of energy and protein would be $153 a ton. We know that corn gluten feed is considerably less than that, so in a lot of ways, corn gluten feed is a very good purchase, a very good tool to use, and a good option for a lot of these situations. So again, that first example I showed you is in the proceedings, and I've got a lot of these additional spreadsheets if you want to contact me. We have handouts as well. But again, this is some of the tools that we can use. We can use corn gluten feed. Distiller dried grains is another example of how we can use the same price with corn and soybean meal to try and price and see if some of these byproduct feeds are competitively priced with our traditional grains. Wheat mids we can throw in there. We do see some wheat mids that come in by rail car, and I do get questions on wheat mids occasionally. Beet pulp is the question that I get quite a bit. Can we use beet pulp in limit-fed diets? And I think definitely you can. The big question with beet pulp is how much moisture is associated with it. If you look at the NRC, the moisture level is 17%, but most of the plants are squeezing some of that water out. Here in my example, is I've got beet pulp, and I've got a 25% dry matter beet pulp here. And when you start pricing beet pulp and determining whether or not to use it in your winter ration or in your growing ration, it's pretty important to determine what the dry matter content of that beet pulp is, because it's going to have a huge effect on what you should be paying for that beet pulp. So again, in this case, we've got $2.60 soybean meal. We follow it down, $2.60 soybean meal, $2.60 corn. That's about $22 per ton beet pulp, when a lot of it being priced in, at least in central Wyoming, was $11 a ton. Beet pulp is another good option, another good thing to look at potentially as a limit-fed diet. Again, another way when we're looking at limit-fed diets, another way to reduce our winter costs is certainly to evaluate some of the additional forages. Again, this is probably important when we're forced into limit feeding situations, when the price of hay or the price of alfalfa, whatever forage we're using, is high. We're trying to find some alternative sources for forage trying to reduce our overall costs. We can look at certainly corn stalks, ammoniated straw, Sudan haze, low-quality forages. All these we can utilize to our advantage to try and provide that roughage in our diet and still reduce that winter feeding cost. So let's take a minute and look at some of the limit feeding winter, some of the studies that have been done, and many of you probably, you've heard presentations on limit-fed diets. You're familiar with some of this. I'm going to just touch briefly on some of the research that's been done. The first study, this is a study done at Ohio State looking at limit feeding some Simmental cross cows at a mature weight of around 1,300 pounds. Again, this was a situation where they fed corn, limit-fed corn, and in this case they had a 10% crude protein hay, and I'm going to put this arrow on a number here that's pretty important. They only fed 2.6 pounds, and this is averaging over the entire feeding period from November to March. In this case, they really took limit feeding to an extreme or high concentrate to an extreme. They only fed 2.6 pounds of hay to those cows throughout those winter months from November to March. So that's a pretty drastic, that's a pretty high concentrate diet. So if you look at the total free choice hay, again, fed 10% crude protein free choice hay to those cows, they received about 32 pounds on the control group or the free choice hay group. The limit fed group were basically fed about half of that by the time you factor in the whole shelled corn, which they fed at about 10 pounds, 2.5 pounds of hay. Again, the 2.5 pounds of supplement, in this case a protein supplement that did include some high calcium, we'll talk about a little bit later, the importance of including that additional calcium. Basically what they did, they fed about half the amount of dry matter and actually reduced their winter feeding costs pretty considerably. In this case, where they were using $80 a ton hay and $2 per bushel weight corn, they basically cut their winter feeding costs in half, basically 77 cents for the free choice hay. I've got those backwards. $1.50 for the free choice hay, 77 cents for the limit-fed corn diet. That's the only one that's backwards in that case. If you follow the rest of those slides down, you see there were some additional differences. There was somewhat difference in weight change. This was a fairly mild winter in this first year of this study. So we saw that the cattle on the free choice hay diet lost about 30 pounds, while the cattle on the high grain diet that were only receiving 2.5 pounds of hay basically gained 4 pounds over that period of time. There was a difference in birth weight that I want to kind of look at here. The control group on the higher free choice hay diet was basically 95 pound birth weight. There was an additional weight gain by those calves, 104 pound birth weight on those high grain diets. However, the authors noted there was no difference in calving difficulty, so they didn't see any additional number of pulls or any additional dystocia in those cattle. But again, some difference there, something to consider. And again, no differences in conception rate, 95 versus 90%. They followed this up with a second year. This is year two of that same study using the same cows. Again, the open cows were replaced in this, but the body of the cows, most of these cows remained throughout the three years of this. Again, I've got the prices flip-flopped. Again, the limit-fed corn diet cost about half of that per day. They reduced their daily feed costs nearly in half by looking at that limit-fed corn diet. They did change this diet a little bit. They reduced that hay down to 1.8 pounds per day in this case. And comparing it over here, again, a pretty limited diet. If you look down here at the weight change, we had about a 50-pound weight change or a weight loss in the free choice hay group, about a 50-pound weight loss. In the other group, there was about a 117-pound weight loss in that group. The second year of the study was a very cold year, a lot of extreme cold temperatures during that second year. I guess what comes to mind with me is certainly heat increment or the fact that our roughages, when we look at them, on a calorie basis, just strictly on a calorie basis, our roughages produce more heat through the heat of fermentation in the rumen, do a better job of providing a lot more heat. So we may see that in extreme situations. We know we get some added benefit from our higher roughage diets because they do help that animal monitor and regulate its own body temperature. Again, some differences there, but our conception rates were somewhat similar, actually a little bit higher with the limit-fed corn group. A calf birth weight, although not significant in that year, again, about a 4 pound difference in birth weight during the second year of that study. Third year, a lot the same. Again, We look still at feeding that hay at about 2 pounds per day. Again, a little bit more weight loss in those cows that were fed free choice hay versus the other group. But again, we see the calf birth weight here, again, about a 7 pound difference in calf birth weight. So again, something to consider. Again, I need to stress that there were no differences in calving difficulty in these groups. But again, if we're in the seed stock business or purebred business, sometimes birth weight takes a little more importance with us. Something that we need to consider when we're doing some of these things. Another question that often will come up is when we're feeding high grain diets, especially corn, do I need to crack that corn? And this is a study that was done, again, at Illinois, looking at whole-shelled corn versus rolled corn in limit-fed diets fed to winter cows. And again, the similar diets here, we've got an ad libitum hay or a free-choice hay group. That was about a 17.5% low to medium-quality alfalfa hay versus whole-shelled corn and rolled corn. In this case, this was fed for about 62 days between calving and breeding. And there was some weight change. You see a slightly more weight change, a little pounds per day basis, 1.1 pounds lost per day on the whole-shelled corn versus 0.84. But then again, the numerical difference there, based on the number of cattle in this, really couldn't pull that about 20 head per treatment. This was not a statistical difference. And I guess I think certainly when we're limit feeding high grain diets, we're not providing ad limitum amounts. We're limiting how much we feed them. I think we do tend to get a little better utilization out of that whole-shelled corn. And certainly it is an alternative or an option when we're trying to winter cows on high-grain diets. I'm going to spend just a second to talk about a University of Wyoming study that we did just last year. And Dr. Hess mentioned this study earlier that we worked in collaboration on. In this case, we looked at limit-fed diets, and not to the extreme that we saw in that Ohio State study I just visited with you about, but where we fed millet hay, some rolled corn, and a protein supplement that was formulated either with or without fat. So we had a control group that got a protein supplement, about 0.9 pounds per day. This was a fairly high NPN, pretty high available DIP protein supplement, versus our high-fat supplement that we fed at 3.7 pounds per day. In this case, you see we fed about 10 pounds of millet hay per head per day. And again, this is on an as-fed basis. And our rolled corn, about 14 pounds for the control group and about 11 pounds for the high-fat group. So again, I think this is maybe a little more manageable level. We're feeding a little more manageable levels of hay and corn in this situation. And again, these two diets were formulated to be similar in energy value. Again, we are providing some added fat, but we're trying to provide the same amount of energy to both groups, the same calories or megacals to both groups in this case, formulated on an energy standpoint. In this case, we see our fairly good-sized cows. Again, this is the University of Wyoming herd, an Angus Gelby crossbred herd, and this is our average weight, and this is in the adult cows here, about a 1,330 average weight on those cows, and then a body condition score of 5.1, 5.08 to 5.05. Again, relatively consistent over that period of time. I'm only showing you a middle weight. Again, this diet was only fed 60 days prior to calving, as Dr. Hess mentioned in his presentation. So we fed this 60 days prior to calving, and when that animal calved, we then removed it from that particular study. And what we found was really absolutely no difference in weight gain. I think about a 2 pound difference between our two treatment groups. So again, the addition of fat did not affect the weight gain and condition score of those cows. I reported as one value here, 1,330 pounds. And then we managed those cows again throughout breeding in that case on a limit fed diet. Again, this was a calf data that Dr. Hess presented earlier. We did not see any difference in birth weight, 91 versus 93 pounds. No difference in calf vigor. And rectal temperature was very similar for both groups as well. Something that he mentioned earlier. However, we did see some of the immune responses that he talked about earlier. So that was one of the interesting aspects of this study. And basically the reason that we did it was looking at the effects on that calf as well. I'll touch base on how those cattle were then handled after that, and this, the point of this is just trying to emphasize that we can manage cows fairly easily on limit-fed diets and still get those animals to rebreed. About 60 days after they calved, on average, they were synchronized using cedars. They inserted the cedar on day one. On day seven, we removed the cedar and gave a shot of prostaglandin, and then bred those animals over the next 6 days. basically the simplified protocol that we used to breed those cows in that particular study. What we got for us was very good rebreeding rates. On average, we had about a 93-94% heat detection on those cows. We actually got six, and of the total cows included in the study, we got 67% of them bred, according to our 30-day pregnancy test. And again, of the cattle that were actually inseminated, or actually about 72% of those were bred. When we then reevaluated and rechecked pregnancy at 75 days, that number dropped slightly. But again, a pretty good success with first service conception rate on those cows, even though they were managed on a limit-fed, high-grain diet. So let's talk just a little bit about some of the management aspects, and I know many people have had their own experiences, limit feeding diets, and some of their own stories to tell. We're going to talk about some of those, but it's important to realize that we can use limit feeding as a management tool on those occasional years when it does pay us to do that. So kind of the take-home message is occasionally limiting intake may be a good thing. And this might be the picture at the bullpen session tonight, I'm not sure. But certainly limit feeding is an opportunity to try and reduce some of those winter costs. Here's some of the guidelines that have been put out by other various universities. In this case, this is an Oklahoma State guideline looking at how do we limit fed rations based on corn grain. The idea is to provide about 0.75% of body weight on corn for a gestating cow, about 0.5% of body weight on grass hay. Lactating cow, we got to remember we have to bump that up. Certainly their energy requirements go up, as Dr. Adams and others have presented today. We know we have to feed more of that, about 1.1% of body weight on a high milking cow during early lactation if we maintain that 0.5 or 0.5% of body weight hay in that case. So what do we expect from a cattle management standpoint? And this is some of the observations I had as well as conversations with people. We certainly know if we limit the amount of hay that we provide or limit the amount of feed that we provide to cows, we can certainly expect some differences in behavior in those cows. Certainly we get some aggressive behavior at the bunk. Depending on how much we limit or how high we put that grain ration, if we limit their intake and provide a very high level of grain, we can expect those cows to probably consume that ration in as little as 20 to 30 minutes. So again, they're going to go through that ration very quickly. It's important to get that ration spread out so all animals have a chance at it and realize that they're going to eat that in a very quick amount of time, so they've got plenty of other time to do a lot of the stuff that we probably don't want them to do. They're going to have time to pace around, to crib, probably to make a lot of noise, especially during that adaptation period. We'll see that probably during the first couple of weeks. If we do run into a situation where cattle don't seem to respond or don't seem to do well on a high-grain diet, we can increase that roughage level, that hay level, to try and improve our management of those animals. The other concern that I've gotten, especially, and I guess it concerns me because I've gotten comments from what I consider very good managers, are that we do see some variations in weight gains and losses. A lot of the literature would tell us that that's not the case. We shouldn't be seeing that. But I know, and especially in some heifer development cases and in some adult cow herd situations, there have been some increased variation, and I think it's due somewhat to that aggressiveness of the cow. We're certainly going to have some boss cows that are going to demand more than their own share of the feed. We're going to have some timid cows that may have a little bit of a challenge trying to get to the bunk and eat enough of it to maintain their weight. So I think we do see that from an aggressiveness standpoint. It's important for us to be good managers and try and address those situations when we notice them. We can do that by trying to increase the amount of hay. We can improve the safety of the ration and the management of the ration by increasing that amount of hay, as well as addressing bunk space. A lot of the studies I showed you earlier were looking at about 24 inches of bunk space for an adult cow. We sure see that anywhere from 24 to 36 inches for that cow. That's going to be one of the issues, too, as well. It's looking at that variation in weight gain and loss is the amount of bunk space available to those cows. The other management things are something that we probably all consider, something we did in the case of the University of Wyoming, was we did sort off our two-year-old heifers and our thin cows. They were not placed with the adult cows. We sorted them off into two groups to try and manage them better. The thin cows and the first calf heifers were on a limit-fed diet, but they were fed separately, fed to address their nutritional needs, and tried to manage that group separately. So we can consider sorting those cows into two or three groups, bred yearlings, maybe younger, and thin cows, like I mentioned, mature cows that are in good condition, maybe can be candidates for a limit-fed program. Maybe you're not interested in limit-feeding the entire cow herd, especially the first year that you're attempting it. Maybe you want to select a smaller group or a subset of the herd to try us out with. Again, your adult calves that are in good condition might be good candidates for that type of a program. And again, I think as managers, it's important to watch the cattle very closely. It may not work for all cows. In some cases, I know in a cold cow project that took place at Torrington, we actually had some adult cows that refused to eat grain. That might be the situation. Certainly watch out for that type of a situation. And certainly they can be removed and maybe managed separately. And monitor condition of those cows and adjust accordingly. I put that in there because I think on these limit-fed diets, especially when you have a cow that's eating her daily portion of feed in about 20 to 30 minutes, the rest of the time she's walking around looking uncontented, I think the tendency as managers is to give them a little bit more. And I think that's a situation we can run into where we may provide more than they actually need, even though we're limiting their intake. We may be providing more nutrients, and we may actually allow those body conditions to creep up to a point where we need to monitor those and keep an eye on that. Typically, when we recommend this, we work those limit-fed diets up fairly slowly. Start up with about 3 to 4 pounds of grain we can start at, and work that up slowly, provide free choice hay to those animals. We work up about a pound per day on our grain, work it up slowly, and once we reach that maximum level of grain that we intend, then we start to back the hay off, start to remove the hay from that diet. And certainly one of the things that many people have observed is when we feed an ionophore, it's very beneficial, especially in these high-grain, limit-fed diets. I think it's especially rumensin does a good job of reducing some of the digestive upsets that we see and may reduce the number of long-hooved cows that we have out there as well. I think ionophores are an important tool to try and include that if we're going to do a limit-fed grain diet. And again, consistent, accurate feeding the same time every day, trying to feed the exact amounts every day, going to improve the success rate of some of these types of high-grain programs. Again, something we pointed out earlier, balancing separately for gestation and lactation, certainly something important to remember and consider. We certainly have different feed requirements. We can balance 2 separate rations. Once they come off of, and once that calf is born and put into a different area or a different pasture, we can provide a different ration to that animal, try and meet her nutrient needs during the winter months. And certainly providing additional calcium, as I'll point out in a couple of additional slides I've got here, when we provide additional grain, we run into a situation we're not typically used to when we feed high forage diets, in that our high grain diets are typically low in calcium, and it's something we often need to supplement or provide in addition. Sometimes we need to provide additional magnesium as well. It just depends on the typical ration. Vitamin A is a consideration, and again, we've already addressed the whole shell versus ground corn. Whole shell corn or whole ear corn actually is probably a good alternative in some situations. So I'm going to go through a couple of examples looking at some of the byproducts that we have as possible alternatives from a limit feeding program. Again, I'm going to go through a few different examples here, and I'm trying to keep some things fairly consistent here. I'm going to show 2 different rations, basically a ration for the last third of pregnancy and a ration for the early lactation in this case. So, again, we're balancing 2 rations for a 1,200-pound cow with high milk potential, and these are just some options, a place to start. If some of you are interested in looking at some of these byproduct feeds, especially in a limit-fed diet, there's some options here and some alternatives, and this is kind of a place to start, or at least a blueprint to take a look at. In this case, I'm using a prairie hay, about a 14%. This is the prairie hay that we take off the station, and this was a fairly high-quality prairie hay. And actually, you can see I've got here about a 14% crude protein prairie hay, a high-quality prairie hay. We're including in all cases and all of these diets I'm going to show about 9%, and this is on an as-fed basis, remember. So I'm trying to balance a ration for a 1,200-pound cow. I'm going to start off with about 9 pounds of hay in all cases. And I have factored into this about 3% loss or a 3% waste. And I know we're feeding this in the bunk, but I've also run a feed wagon before, and I know that sometimes I'm not the neatest deliverer of feed in some cases. So I've included about a 3% loss in that as well. So basically look at that. If we're going to the traditional prairie hay, rolled corn, a limited type of a program. We can feed about 9 pounds of prairie hay, about 6 pounds of corn, 1.5 pounds of soybean meal, and some additional limestone or some additional calcium. We've got to get that calcium in there. Some either through our protein supplement or through our mineral program, we've got to get that in there. But again, that's kind of an example here, 9 and 6. We look at that early lactation, that changes pretty dramatically. If we keep the same 9 pounds of prairie hay, we have to bump that up to about 10 pounds of rolled corn and about 3 pounds of soybean meal just to address her additional energy and protein needs during that period of time. Oops, there, I missed one. Here's the Stillard dried grains, and as Dr. Radley pointed out earlier, there is probably consideration there. We've got a fairly high-fat product, and we maybe need to think about that a little bit, but I think it makes an excellent feed source, an excellent opportunity to include in a limit-fed diet. And here I'm including it along with basically serving as an energy source as well as my protein source, where we can look at the same cow, same situation, the same 9 pounds of hay, and I'm providing about 3 pounds of rolled corn and about 4 pounds of DDG in this case. So again, we can include DDG. It's going to provide our protein, a good source of protein, again, more of a bypass protein as we learned earlier. But again, a good source of protein in this case, that again bumps up when we look at the last third of the early lactation, it bumps up to 5 pounds of corn and 7 pounds of DDG in that early lactation situation. Beet pulp, again, beet pulp's another question that I get quite a bit. We can certainly include that. Many people use it similar to silage in that it's about a 10% crude protein, a fairly high energy byproduct, and then we can use it as well. In this case, I've got included in there, we still feed about 2 pounds of corn, but I've also included about 18 pounds of beet pulp. And again, remember, that stuff is fairly wet. I've included it here, and this is on an as-fed basis. So again, it's about, I've got a 25% dry matter, beet pulp here, again, 25% dry matter, so we're feeding on an as-fed basis about 18 pounds of that. We can follow that through, include about 18 pounds in our early lactation diet, and still feed about 6 pounds of shelled corn to meet those needs. We've got some soybean meal as well. Again, just some blueprint or some examples of using some of these byproducts. Probably a really good alternative that I think would work very well is including beet pulp as well as distillers in some type of limit-fed wintering ration. In this case, I've got, again, our 9 pounds of prairie hay, about 2.5 pounds of DDG, and about 19 pounds of beet pulp. Again, a pretty good alternative here. Again, that bumps up when we go to that early lactation situation. But again, another good example of trying to use those byproducts to reduce our costs and manage those cows on a limit-fed program. So I'm going to kind of wind down here and just make some general observations. We know we may be affecting the birth weight of those calves. At least the study done at Ohio State would suggest that birth weights appear to be slightly increased. But again, no difference in calving difficulty. So again, expect that, but really no differences in calving difficulty or dystocia. From a rebreeding standpoint, none of the studies that I've looked at, and again, I just showed a small sample of some of the limit-fed studies out there, no reported effect on subsequent rebreeding rates as long as we address those energy and protein needs of that animal. If we effectively do that, we really haven't seen many or any effects on the rebreeding status. Now, again, the variation aspect that I touched on earlier may affect that somewhat, but when we correctly manage and do a good job of managing our limit-fed programs, our rebreeding is pretty well seems to take care of itself in that case. Again, cattle take about 6 weeks to adjust to these. We work them up fairly slowly. And typically, if we miss a feeding or we're late with a feeding, we typically include some additional hay just to minimize any difficulties that we might have just because we're missed a feeding or we're late. So again, just as a highlight, we typically try and consider limit feeding, maybe only started off with just a portion of the herd, maybe not the whole herd, but look at addressing some of those cows that maybe we can provide a limit-fed diet and reduce our winter costs with. Balance our rations separately for the late gestation and early lactation. And again, the safety of the ration, we can address some of that safety or how we our success in feeding that ration by looking at long-stemmed hay versus ground hay, definitely including an ionophore such as rumensin in that ration, as well as processing, the degree of processing on that grain and the amount of grain we feed. All of those are going to affect the safety of that ration. So again, really, depending on trying to determine what level of grain works best for you or what wintering ration works best for you, I think it's important to choose your feeding program and how it fits your operation. If you're able to feed those cattle in confinement and feed them in a bunk with a feed wagon, you may be able to look at many of these different alternatives, many of these byproducts, many of these different high-grain diets, and successfully use those as a way of reducing winter feed costs. Some of the cases where we are on range, it may limit the amount of grain that we're able to feed and the degree to which we limit those cattle's intake. So again, that's certainly going to influence how we do that. And with that, I appreciate your time, I appreciate your attention, and I'll see everybody at the bullpen session this evening. Thank you.